Hello, I'm Kevin Youngblood. This is number 0316, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0316. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, once again we'll meet former child star Kathy Garver, best known as Sissy, from Family Affair. She's now the author of Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood. She got her big break in the movies in the film The Ten Commandments, working as an extra.
So all of a sudden I hear this great big voice boom out, "Don't let that little girl's face get in the camera." And I said, "Who is that? Is that God? We are working on Ten Commandments. That's coming from way above me." Well, it turned out it wasn't God. It was a cinematic deity, and that was Cecil B. DeMille, who was up on a great big crane trying to get an aerial shot of one of the Exodus scenes. So he descended, came over, we chatted, and he wrote, personally, scenes into the movie for me.
Moses Lamb, co-founder of Vitality Air, a company that sells fresh air from Lake Louise and Banff. How did this idea get off the ground?
My partner and I, we wanted to do something really fun, and we wanted to start a business that would help people as well. So we decided to just list a bag of fresh mountain air on eBay and see what would happen. So it sat there for the longest time, and nobody bought it. And then one day, all of a sudden, it sold for 99 cents. And then we're like, oh, awesome. And we listed another one, and, you know, like a couple of days later, it sold for 168 US. So we were like, oh, there's definitely a demand for this product. So we started our company back in November 2014, and we've been selling for about the last 3 months now.
Stuart Nolman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nolman. Book Banter takes a look at Harper Lee's highly anticipated Mockingbird sequel, Ghost at a Watchman. Let's all return to Maycomb right here on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0316, was Kevin Youngblood. He is a production automation director at CTV in Edmonton. That's just a fancy way of saying he directs the news on TV. Thank you very much, Kevin, for doing the guest Slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? An Illinois job applicant texted his way out of an offered position when he accidentally sent the human resources manager a nude selfie. Elmhurst police said the human resources manager at a St. Charles company contacted authorities August 14th to report receiving two nude pictures via text message August 11th and 13th from a man who had been offered a position with the company. There was a conditional offer of employment made in this particular applicant, said Elmhurst Police Chief Michael Ruth. He texted the HR director and sent a nude photo of himself. Ruth said the company learned the identity of the sender when he later used the same phone number for a follow-up call. Police said the man who sent the pictures told investigators the nude selfies were sent accidentally. Police contacted the offender, who admitted to sending the photographs, explaining that they were actually meant for another individual and were sent to the victim in error. Police advised the offender to cease any contact with the victim. The victim decided not to press charges, but police said the man's actions were not free from consequences. My understanding is they've rescinded the offer of employment, Ruth said. Yep. And now that guy gets to learn the naked truth. Muslim clerics complain of the commercialization of the holy city of Mecca. They did that during the annual Hajj pilgrimage. But for Pope Francis's mid-September visit to New York, Washington, D.C., and Philadelphia, shameless street vendors and entrepreneurs already appear to be eclipsing Mecca's experience. Merchants said they'd be selling, among other tacky items, mozzarella cheese statuettes of the Pope that go for about $20, a Pope toaster to burnish Francis's image on bread, a Philly-themed bobblehead associating the Pope with the movie Rocky, local beers, Papal Pleasure, and YOPO, which is an acronym, You Only Pope Once, and t-shirts that say, Yo Pontiff, and The Pope is my homeboy. The Wall Street Journal quoted a Philadelphia Archdiocese spokesman saying that you kind of have to take it all in stride. Yes, because as I've often said on this program, the Lord does work in mysterious ways. Well, former Massachusetts Institute of Technology lecturer Joseph Gibbons was sentenced in July to a year in prison for robbing a New York City Capital One bank in December while operating a video camera in a heist that he had insisted all along was merely performance art. He had been suspected in a similar robbery in Rhode Island in November. His biography on the MIT website described him as blurring the boundaries between fact and fiction, self and persona, with a contradictory impulse to confabulate and dissimulate. The Queens Museum in New York City has offered to screen the footage of the robbery as an art piece. You know, his description of his act could also be used to describe the Ben Affleck, Jennifer Lopez movie Gigli, which was also a crime on film, but nobody went to jail for that. Moving right along, an Australian man caught with suspected crystal meth spent 4 months in jail before investigators discovered the substance was Epsom salt. Travis George, the Maryborough, Queensland man's lawyer, said his client was jailed when police performed a routine check of his car and discovered a substance they suspected to be crystal methamphetamine. George said his client was remanded to custody due to his criminal history, and he was held for 4 months before investigators with Queensland Health's Forensic and Scientific Services at the John Tongay Center discovered the suspected crystal meth was actually Epsom salt. The charges were then withdrawn by police, George said. George detailed the case in support of Maryborough Magistrate John Smith's complaint about long delays when dealing with the John Tongay Center. Smith said one of his cases was adjourned for 2 months pending the outcome of testing. It has always been a concern for our clients about delay due to awaiting analysis where it is forensic, George said. A Queensland Health spokeswoman denied any lengthy delays for forensic and scientific services. Urgent cases are completed within the time frame required by the police and the court, she said. All forensic testing performed by FSS is prioritized daily with police and the courts. Really? So, this pinhead of a spokeswoman doesn't see anything wrong with some guy being locked up for 4 months to be proven innocent when they finally get around to testing? How interesting. Please tell me there is someone this guy can sue. Please. And authorities in Newfoundland and Labrador said a man was arrested for allegedly showing up at a door of a family courthouse with a revving chainsaw. The Royal Newfoundland Constabulary said sheriff's officers inside the Unified Family Courthouse in St. John's saw 43-year-old Jason Collins approach the door of the building with a running chainsaw at about 9:30 a.m. on Wednesday and put the building into lockdown. RNC officers arrived and took Collins into custody. Investigators said Collins had been served with documentation on Tuesday pertaining to an upcoming court date. Collins was arrested on charges of possession of a dangerous weapon and assaulting an officer. He was sent for an overnight psychiatric assessment, which sounds like a really good idea. I'm guessing when he finally does get his court date, things are not likely to go in his favor. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, friends of the Stuff File program know how much we love truck spills on this show. Here's the latest one sent in to us by our good friend Bob Welsh at WDEV Radio. Early morning commuters in Rochester, New York, saw heavy delays after a truck carrying heads of cabbage overturned on Interstate 490. The tractor trailer was traveling eastbound at around 6:30 a.m. Traffic was delayed on both sides of the highway because of the spillage. According to the New York State Police, the driver of the vehicle was transported to hospital with minor injuries. Now, I've seen the pictures. Needless to say, heads will roll. And as Bob mentioned, if only it had slammed into a giant truck filled with boiling water and beef brisket. Yes. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Just last month, we spoke to actress Kathy Garver about a gala taking place for former and current child actors called Guiding Stars Gala. Now, at the time, we had briefly mentioned that she had a book coming out called Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood. Well, that book has now launched, so we have Kathy back on the line with us from California to talk about it. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program once again. Before we get started and talking about your book, that gala that we were talking about the last time, Guiding Stars Gala, how did it go?
It was very successful. Lots of red carpet, lots of child stars, former and today, and lots of bowling.
Great. Sounds like it was a good time. And again, I thank you for being on the program back when that was happening to talk about it. But let's talk about your book, Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood. What is the point that you're trying to express in writing this book for your many fans?
That whatever life dishes out to you, that you can, whether it's positive or negative, and especially if it's negative, there's always a way to maybe push that food around in the plate, make it more palatable. There is a way that one can persevere, I believe, just understanding that, if you dish it out, you can take it, and there'll be more food coming along the way. I just made that up, Anthony. But I don't mind this analogy. I must be hungry.
Okay. Well, it just sounds like, generally speaking, you are naturally a positive person.
I am. I have to blame my sun sign. I am a Sagittarius, and I think that's December, and December is just full of all kinds of wonderful things that are happening and the holidays, et cetera. And so it is a part of my personality.
Now, one of the things I want to ask about, you actually grew up in the California area where movie magic and television magic is made, correct?
Correct.
So I'm guessing that there were a lot of kids who, when you were growing up and going to school, either their parents were in the business or other family members were in the business, and therefore a lot of kids had opportunities to be in the business. So was there any kind of jealousy when someone like yourself, for instance, would succeed at an early age, when friends around you whose family might be in the business, and it is a company town, so to speak, were not becoming successful?
I didn't really feel that. And of course, I grew up many years ago, and we didn't have as much social media, and bullying was really not known at that time. There was more of a camaraderie, and people were happy. We had John Provost was in my school. That was in Lassie. He was a couple years behind me. And we had Laura Montalban, who was the daughter of Ricardo Montalban, and Gail Stone Darley, who was kin of George Clooney. And it was more that, and especially as a child, that we would be studying and we would play ball together. We would do kid stuff. If someone went off to do a part, they would come back. And there was really little talk about it, because that was something that was just accepted. That is what we always did. So we got to get this assignment out about the Otis elevator so we can get an A on our paper was more on our mind.
It's interesting as how time changes things, because you talk about the kin of George Clooney, and I guess at the time you would be thinking of them as the kin of Rosemary Clooney.
Well, correct. And it was, and Gail is the daughter of Rosemary Clooney. She's, and then she's the half, let me see how it goes, the half sister of George Clooney. So, yes, but we were talking about Rosemary Clooney and Jose Farrar, and we all went to Beverly Hills Catholic School. And so that, and they all lived in Beverly Hills, so they would come to our school and our church.
Now, if I understand, you were first recognized, if I'm not mistaken, by Cecil B. DeMille?
Yes, it was a wonderful way to start my career. And I was just hired as an extra in one of the hordes of people that was used in Ten Commandments, not the silent version. I think I've told you that, Peter Anthony. So all of a sudden I hear this great big voice boom out, "Don't let that little girl's face get in the camera." And I say, "Who is that? Is that God? we are working on Ten Commandments. That's coming from way above me. Well, it turned out it wasn't God. It was a cinematic deity, and that was Cecil B. DeMille, who was up on a great big crane trying to get an aerial shot of one of the Exodus scenes. So he descended, came over, we chatted, and he wrote, personally, scenes into the movie for me with Charlton Heston.
Wow. Very, very
yeah.
impressive.
Auspicious beginning.
So you almost have a different kind of Lana Turner story as far as Discovery is concerned.
I wasn't on a seat in a little soda shop. I was on the seat of a rickety wagon with a rough kind of blanket over me that they put. I still did the scene that I was to do, but they kind of put the blanket over my face so I wouldn't be seen.
Now, the book, your new book, Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood, the foreword is actually done by another screen legend who was also a young child actor, Patty Duke.
That's right. And, you know, I got the sweetest tweet from her today, and it said, oh, Kathy's book is out. This is very well written, and it's a very honest story. Everyone should read this. Love, Patty. And I thought, well, how nice is that? So she had quite a career, obviously.
I know I asked you this the last time we chatted, but in light of writing your book and in going through the career that you had, your general thoughts on children as child stars in today's world?
Well, I have another book that's coming out in 2016 that is called Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now? And, you know, now, oh my gosh, because of social media and Twitter and all of this exposure for these young kids, it is certainly much more difficult to have, with this exposure, to develop any sensibility of a normal, quote-unquote, life. And I think it's so much more difficult, you know, if you're a tweener and you, oh my gosh, I have a pimple, I'll try and cover that up with some makeup. Well, then, you know, a million Twitter fans, you know, oh, she had a pimple. Oh, did you see her face last night? You know, on Facebook or whatever. So for a child star and a tweener who is trying and has enough difficulty in establishing their identity, it is just exacerbated by all this attention.
Did you have any difficulty at all growing up in that situation? I mean, again, we didn't have the social media back then, but just growing up with the usual things that afflict teens and tweens as they mature, you do it almost in the public eye. Was that ever a concern for you when you were growing up?
Well, I was saved in the fact that I went to I got out of show business for about 3 years, and I moved from the heart of Beverly Hills in Hollywood to San Bernardino, which is about an hour and a half from L.A., but at that time it had 100,000 people. We used to be orange groves all over, and I had a small-town atmosphere, and I grew up with my kids and experiencing all the things that, you know, normal teenagers would do. Let's go cruising, or, oh my gosh, I had a drink of Boone's Family apple wine or whatever. But we didn't have drugs then. So Anissa, who stayed in Hollywood, the little girl who played Buffy on my show, was exposed to the drug culture. And that was much more rampant in Los Angeles and also at that time in the late 60s and early 70s. And she was not able to, you know, succeed as an adult without, you know, some very tragic things happening to her.
So bring us up today. We have a few more moments. Bring us up today to what you're doing today. You just mentioned earlier you're writing a second book. Are you still acting?
Oh, my gosh, yes. As a matter of fact, I have a commercial that I'm doing this afternoon for a real estate company. I am starring in a new movie called Heaven with a Gun, which will be out in 2016, as well as another Western, Big Sky, which will be shot in 2016. I am producing and starring in another series called Executive Ranks, which will be on Netflix, and I play a CEO of a global company. And so I'm quite busy. With the book is already finished. It's at the publisher, the Ex-Child Star. So I have a little room so I can promote this book, which, to be shameless in promotion, can be purchased on Amazon.com. Or if you want an autographed copy, you can go to KathyGarver.com, KathyGarver.
And regardless of whatever business somebody is in your case, it's working in Hollywood. The one thing I think your book probably shares with a lot of people is just the power of positive thinking.
Absolutely. You know, and everybody has trials and tribulations in their lives. Everybody goes up, you know, over humps, hopefully. But if you can just understand in your heart, knowing that perhaps there's a higher spirit that is guiding you, and everybody is going through this. It might not be the same thing, but it is something. So if you just keep that positive feeling and go forth, many things will come to you and you will be able to survive, as I did.
The book is called Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood. I thank you very much once again, Kathy, for being on the program with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Kathy Garver, author of Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood. Again, you can find her website at KathyGarver.com. You can also go to my website at TheStuffFile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0316, and you'll find links to her site and also links to Amazon.com where you can order her book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at Peter@TheStuffFile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at TheStuffFile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit TheStuffFile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. In the interest of time, kindly hold your applause until the entire program is over.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about selling air from Alberta. Plus, Stuart Nauman is in with another edition of Book Banter. And, of course, we have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. And much more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, a woman in Keene, New Hampshire, reported a man came into her home and sexually assaulted her. The male subject followed the victim into the residence. That's what was noted in the police report. The investigation revealed the full name of the suspect as a result of a telephone number left behind, and they got a warrant for his arrest. 36-year-old Huckleberry Finn was located on Main Street in Keene and taken into custody without incident. Huckleberry Finn. We always knew that boy would come to no good. Anyway, one must consider their priorities during a fire. A California man who ushered his wife and kids out of their home during an apartment complex fire said his first thought was to save his barbecue ribs. Robert Wright Ribs in Hand, gave an interview to KMPH-TV after the fire at his Fresno apartment complex took place, and he told the reporter he was barbecuing at 3 a.m. when the fire erupted at an apartment next door. "The only thing I think first is make sure them ribs is right, and I ran over and got my family, man," Wright said. He said he carried his kids out of the apartment and was able to rescue his ribs. Wright explained why he was barbecuing so late at night. "It was 3 o'clock in the morning. I was hungry, man. I was like, put them ribs on there," he said. A woman and a child escaped from the fire next door to Wright and were treated for smoke inhalation. Wright said he didn't require any medical attention. "I didn't get any injuries except for all that smoke in my lungs, but I already had smoke in my lungs, so I'm all right," he said. Yeah. Clearly, he's not a culinary, family, or medical genius, is he? Well, a man who failed to turn up for work for 18 months was rightly sacked, although he had been dead the entire time. Jeffrey Tolliver died of cancer in December of 2014, and his death had even been announced in an online obituary. But officials in New York, where Tolliver worked as a Medicaid eligibility specialist, didn't seem to be aware and set up a hearing to approve his firing. The fact that he had not been at work for a year and a half did not seem strange to the Human Resources Administration. The judge at the hearing approved the firing, also noting that Tolliver had failed to turn up to defend himself. After realizing their blunder, HRA spokesman David Neustadt said, "We did everything we could to contact him and his family. This employee was not paid when he wasn't working, but we left his job open in case he recovered." Recovered from what? Anyway, friends of Tolliver criticized the handling of the case. Pal Ted Wilbright told the New York Post, "How do you fire a man who was already dead? He deserves better. The agency itself should have known. He's dead, and they're saying he abandoned his job. He didn't abandon his job. His job abandoned him. He was a good man, truly, truly a good man." A family member also claimed that they had informed Tolliver's supervisor of his illness and death. Meanwhile, the HRA said that they would take no further action now that they know of Mr. Tolliver's unfortunate death. Well, isn't that mighty compassionate of them? Nothing like pinhead bureaucracy, huh? Here's another case of bureaucratic idiocy at its finest. Australia and New Zealand are providing support for the U.S. government's firefighting efforts in Montana, but some of the state of Montana's support has been refused, even when the helicopters the state wants to use to fight the fires were right over the burning forests. The reason? In 2014, the U.S. Forest Service told the state that a certain type of helicopter could not carry buckets of more than 220 gallons when fighting federal fires, but the state had five UEs in that category that had been modified years earlier, and their buckets hold 324 gallons of water. The feds say their policy provides a margin of safety. The state says its choppers are safe, and it's not willing to use different protocols depending on whether the fire it's fighting is federal or not. Gee, I wonder what the federal government wants most to extinguish in this case. Fires or state autonomy? Yeah. And a Western Pennsylvania couple who bought a neighboring vacant house because they feared it was a fire hazard. Apparently, they were right. It caught fire while they were at the county courthouse signing the deed. Bradley and Penny Mason bought the house in Mayersdale, intending to tear it down. It's located just feet from their home, which is about 80 miles southeast of Pittsburgh. A neighbor called 911 to report the fire at around 3 p.m., and fire officials have determined the origin was suspicious. The fire marshal is still investigating the cause. Penny Mason said the home had been sitting empty for a couple of years. "We didn't even know about the fire until the fire department was called. The first floor fire was quickly extinguished." Well, there's, I guess, less of it to tear down now, isn't there? Yeah. Anyway, we have one more story to share with you before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And, you know, this next story can only come under the heading of more things you need to worry about. Yeah. Under a 1981 treaty, at least 50 countries, including the United States, have banned their militaries from employing flamethrowers. They say they're inhumane. But entrepreneurs have begun to market the devices domestically for $900 to $1,600 each based on the distance of the flame. That would be about 25 to 50 feet. Federal regulators appear uninterested as the contraptions are technically neither firearms nor explosives, and only two states prohibit them outright, though a few jurisdictions believe flamethrowers are illegal under fire codes. The Ohio startup company ThrowFlame has sensed the need for marketing savvy and describes flamethrowers as primarily for entertainment. Wow. Recent news reports indicate a slight run on sales under the suspicion that authorities will soon realize the danger and outlaw them. Gee, you know, I remember when I was a kid when lawn darts were primarily for entertainment, but I digress. However, just what is the entertainment value of a flamethrower? I worry that the budding young psychopath next door who might love to play with matches would be out trolling for birds, bugs, and neighborhood pets with his new entertaining flamethrower. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? The air is pure out west in the Canadian Rockies, so why not sell some of it? That's what two guys from Edmonton decided to do. Moses Lamb and Troy Paquette are selling bottles of air from Banff and Lake Louise. Their company is called Vitality Air, and Moses Lamb is on the line with us right now from Edmonton. Hi, Moses.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So when did you get this idea to sell bottles of air?
Actually, it's really funny. You know, my partner and I, we wanted to do something really fun, and we wanted to start a business that would, you know, help people as well. So, you know, we decided to just list a bag of fresh mountain air on eBay and see what would happen. So it sat there for the longest time and nobody bought it. And then one day all of a sudden it sold for 99 cents. And then we're like, oh, awesome. And we listed another one. And, you know, like a couple of days later, it sold for 168 US. So we were like, oh, there's definitely a demand for this product. So we started our company back in November 2014, and we've been selling for about the last 3 months now.
Okay, so let's back up a second. You sold that second bag, which is basically a Ziploc bag, of clean Banff air on eBay for $168 US. Did you have any...
That's right.
Did you have any contact with the person who bought it to get their motivation, the idea of why they would spend $168 US for air?
That's a good question, Peter. We didn't contact them at all, actually. We just shipped out the thing and hoped for the best.
And did you get the money back? Did they actually pay?
Yeah, absolutely. And everything went fine and dandy, just like a normal eBay transaction.
Okay, so after this bottle sells for, this Ziploc bag, and by the way, was it a Ziploc lunch bag or storage bag? How big are we talking?
It was a Ziploc freezer bag, the biggest one.
The freezer bag, okay, gotcha. Okay, so after this sold for $168, you and Troy decide, maybe there's a business here. How did you get that started?
So from there, we just, Peter, went into product development and tried to find the best way of how to capture the air, and then from there, not only how to capture the air, but how to deliver the air to our customers as well. So, I mean, right now there are products out there. There are people selling air already, but they're selling it in like a pop can type of device. So once you pop the tab, you know, the fresh air comes out, and then the contaminated air also comes in, right? And I mean, with most of those products are selling for, I think, 90 cents each. Or I believe there's even one company selling that pop can for, I think it was like $16 US. But, you know, for $16 US, you only get one breath, whereas ours, we have a two-in-one mask, and it also comes with upwards of 150 inhalations.
Okay, so 150 inhalations. Okay, so how do you capture the air?
Well, that's a trade secret, Peter. I mean, if I told you, I'd have to kill you. But it's a long and tedious process. We sit out there in Banff for about 10 hours capturing this air, and then after that, we bring it back to our little factory here, and we put it into these little cans.
Sitting outdoors for 10 hours in Banff. Boy, life must be rough, huh?
It's really, really rough, absolutely.
What were you and what were you and Troy doing before you created this company, Vitality Air?
Well, we're still doing it. Troy's a realtor here in Edmonton, and I'm a banker here in Edmonton as well.
Okay, so as we know, with the situation with the economy and the price of oil going down, the province of Alberta is being hit pretty rough when it comes to the economy. So kudos to you for creating something that also takes advantage of one of your natural resources.
Yeah, thank you very much, Peter. You know, most of our products are targeted towards China, India, and Dubai. So China's economy is, not the most stable as well, but at the same time, they have the most millionaires and billionaires. So that's our target market.
Okay, so you said you started this out as a joke, but now you've gone and turned this into a business. In between the time that you sold that one on eBay and you now have this business that is running, did anybody along the way said to you guys, come on, you're not serious. Are you really going to try and sell Banff Air?
We have lots of people saying that, Peter, and, especially with all our other interviews as well, all the comments, people are saying that too. But you know what? We're having a lot of fun with it, and people are buying it, surprisingly. We've been selling only for 3 months, and we're averaging about 300 bottles a month, Peter. So, I mean, sales are good, but, we'd love more.
Okay, and we should mention your bottles sell for about $15 plus shipping and handling, correct?
Yeah, shipping is only $9, and it's $9 flat no matter how many bottles you purchase. So even if you buy 10 bottles, it'd still be $9, so that'd be the best bang for your buck.
And how big, how much air are we talking? You said 150 breaths of oxygen, but is there a quantitative measurement of that? How much are we talking here?
Yeah, just to make things easy for people, we put on there about 7.7 liters for the most popular one that we sell. We also have one that's 3 liters of air, and that works out to about 80 inhalations.
Yeah. You know, air is a natural resource, and when you try to sell a natural resource, the government usually tries to step in. Have you heard from the government of Alberta about your process and the fact that you're selling air?
We haven't heard from them yet, but I've been following some articles like Nestle and their water. The government wants to charge them, I believe it was $1.29 for a million liters. So I mean, if the government wants to charge my company Vitality Air $1.29 for a million liters of air, I'd be more than happy to pay them.
So, you mentioned where some of the people are buying this is. Let's discuss that a little bit. Where are your biggest customers, and were you surprised by where your customers are coming from?
Yeah, you know what, Peter? We don't have really like a central spot that a lot of this is going to. It's just really spread out. We've had our air go to Thailand. We've had it go to Israel. We've had one recently go to Kandahar Air Force Base, right? Just all over the place, right? So, I mean, they've just been going all over, and I don't know what to say. I'm very pleased and very happy that everyone's willing to try our product.
Now, at the time that we're talking, the time of recording this, one of the things that is of concern is the fact that in your neck of the woods, there's also not only just clean air, but a problem with wildfires. Is that affecting the quality of your air that you're getting, and how is it affecting business, if at all?
Yeah, that's a great question, Peter. You know, luckily for us, we bottled all of this air prior to all these forest fires. So when we're out there for 10 hours, it yields us about 3,000 to 4,000 bottles of air. So most of this was all done prior to all the forest fires and everything. So rest assured, the air that you're breathing from these cans are fresh, pure. In terms of rebottling, we're probably going to have to get some tests done just to make sure that all the smog and all the pollutants have been cleared prior to bottling some more from Banff. Mm. So, I mean, that being said, we might have to go and find ourselves a new location. But hey, you know what? At the end of the day, it was the smog issue that put us on the map. We were nobodies before. We're still nobodies, but at least now, you know, we're on the radio.
And I understand that a portion of the proceeds from the sales of this is going to be donated to the Red Cross to help combat the fires.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, it's these wildfires and these media outlets that put us on the map because of these wildfires. So without them, you know, none of this would be happening. So we'd love to donate a portion of the proceeds back to them because they helped us.
And I wouldn't be surprised if, I mean, I don't know what kind of marketing schemes you have. As I mentioned earlier, the government always likes to step in, but I wouldn't be surprised if you were a boon also to tourism in that part of the woods. I mean, if you can't, now that you've tried the air, why don't you come and try the real air? You know what I mean?
That's right. I mean, I'd like to think we help Banff, and actually some of the gift stores in Banff do carry our products. There's one gift store there called A Bit of Banff, and the owner there, his name is Keys. He's a really nice guy. I encourage you guys, if you get a chance to visit Banff, to go visit his store.
Excellent. So people can find out more information. They can order what you're selling. That is air from Banff. They can go to vitalityair.com, correct?
Correct. You got it, Peter.
Moses, congratulations, and thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk to us.
No problem. Thank you, Peter. Have a great day.
Moses Lamb, one of the founders of Vitality Air, which sells bottles of air from Banff and Lake Louise. You can check out their website at vitalityair.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0316, and you'll find the link. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. This week, tens of thousands of people will get a shot in the arm. Some will get an allergy shot, others a vaccine or painkiller. Whatever the reason, a lot of them won't like getting that shot because of the pain. For those people, what I'm about to say might be even more painful. You see, a company has developed a hypodermic needle that hurts a lot less than regular needles. That's right, it hurts less. So why is this news painful? Because the company decided not to sell it. The needle is coated with silicone, and lawsuits against silicone manufacturer Dow Corning put the company in bankruptcy, even though the lawsuits were later proven to be scientifically groundless. So, to avoid lawsuits that could put it out of business, the developer of the painless needle decided not to sell it. Let's be fair, it's a shame how many products never make it to market because of lawsuit abuse. It's also a shame how many life-saving products have been removed from the marketplace simply because of liability concerns. It doesn't have to be this way. Learn more. Visit our new website at centerforamericatv.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And yes, here he is once indeed, Stuart Nauman, talking about one of the world's great procrastinators. Hello, Stu.
Hi, Peter. Sorry that we put this off for a while. I didn't mean to. Oh, you mean Harper Lee.
Yes, I mean Harper Lee.
Yeah, I think, 55 years is quite a long time between books, don't you think?
Yes, it is.
Yes. But on this edition of Book Banter, we're going to look at the most highly anticipated literary event. It took place not only this past summer, but I think so far of 2015. It's the publication of Harper Lee's second novel, Ghost of the Watchman, the quote-unquote sequel to her classic Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, To Kill a Mockingbird. And hasn't created such excitement over a book, over a publication of a book, since the launch of the later volumes of the Harry Potter series. Now, since its publication back in 1960, Mockingbird has sold over 40 million copies, and thanks to the Oscar-winning 1962 film starring Gregory Peck as Atticus Finch, the people of Macomb, Alabama, have forever been echoed in the etched in the conscience of its millions of readers, especially high school students like myself, who read the book as part of the curriculum in our English class. Which probably explains the widespread excitement when it was announced that the long-lost manuscript of Watchmen was discovered in a safe deposit box and was set to be published and released on July 14th. Now, this led to a 2 million copy print run of the book and became the most pre-ordered book in the history of HarperCollins, which has been around for almost 200 years. Now, many readers actually expressed disappointment and dismay with how the much-beloved characters from Mockingbird emerged as much less than beloved in Watchmen. Some bookstores even offered refunds to those customers who read the book and were kind of disappointed by it.
Mm.
Now, For the multitude of people who have bought Watchmen and are about to read it, they should fully understand the context and circumstances behind the book's creation before passing judgment on it, and whether or not it would live up to its much-hyped billing. Now, Lee wrote the book back in 1955, but her publisher rejected the manuscript and asked her to write another novel in which the characters were taken back in time to the 1930s and were a little bit more fleshed out. Now, Watchmen is set in 1954, at a time when segregation was gradually being pecked away throughout the Deep South. Now, Scout Finch, who is referred throughout the story as by original name of Jean Louise, is now in her 30s and lives in New York City, and decides to return to her hometown of Maycomb for a vacation to touch base with her family and friends, especially her old flame Henry Clinton, who, by the way, works as a lawyer in the law firm where Atticus is employed. However, Scout comes home to a Maycomb that is totally unrecognizable to her, and that change is shockingly represented with her much-adored and wise father Atticus Finch. Much to the surprise of Scout, as well as many readers, the highly revered Atticus Finch does not age well in the story. He suffers from crippling arthritis and is discovered to be an ardent racist. Now, this begins a chain of events that leaves her quite bitter and disillusioned towards her hometown and her family, which climaxes with a verbally violent confrontation with Atticus towards the end of the story, and is probably one of the most intense revelatory scenes in the book that will certainly throw the readers for a loop. Now, basically, Ghost Set of Watchmen is a story of sentimental journey gone so wrong, and of a town that just won't change with an America that is gradually realizing that the Jim Crow ways of the Deep South are fading away and is making way for the civil rights movement that is on the horizon. It's a raw story with a lot of rough edges to it, and many of the characters end up being quite unrefined. It sort of makes you understand the raison d'etre of Lee's publisher to ask her to write another book. So Ghost Set of Watchmen is, you got to read that with a total understanding of circumstances behind the book. And I think maybe you should read Mockingbird first in order to reinforce that sense of understanding before you dive into Watchmen. You may or may not be satisfied with it, but at least you'll get a complete portrait of the Finch family of Maycomb, Alabama, warts and all, without seeing it as a much hype publicity stunt to garner book sales.
So basically what we're talking about here is a book that is considered a sequel to To Kill a Mockingbird, although it theoretically was written first.
Yeah. It's sort of like a sequel that was a prequel, so to speak.
Sort of like the way George Lucas does things.
Yeah. Yeah, he does things sideways, actually. That's what I like about him.
Yeah. So did you like it?
I thought it was pretty interesting. Like I said, I understood, I was more well-informed of the context and story behind the book. But, I think you have to read it very slowly and very carefully to just appreciate the nuances of, you know, this is, a sentimental journey, but, you know, this is before the much polished book came out, 5 years later, which was To Kill a Mockingbird. So,
and that brings up another point, and this works for films, for television, as well as for books. Do you think it's important that people know what they're going to watch or read before they delve into it?
Yeah, I mean, somehow...
Generally speaking, not just with this book, but generally speaking.
You know, like, let's say you watch the Star Wars movies. You know, see them in, maybe it's better if you see them, chronologically.
Right.
And start with those sequels that started in 1999. And you'll get a full, complete picture of the Star Wars saga.
Okay, so now that we've talked about Harper Lee, she only has two books. Well, dare I ask, is there something else out there you can recommend this vein? Because it wouldn't be by Harper.
To Kill a Mockingbird, there is a book, actually, I read last summer, which I enjoyed very much. It was called The Mockingbird Next Door by the Chicago Tribune reporter. Her name is Marja Mills. And a few years ago, she decided to move to Monroeville, Alabama, and managed to find a house next door to Harper Lee. And she befriended Harper Lee and basically got the private side of the author that many people wanted to know but never did know, and her reflections on the success of Mockingbird and how she dealt with that success, and how she was living the twilight of her years in her hometown, which was formed the basis of Maycomb, Alabama.
And that book is called?
It's called The Mockingbird Next Door. It's by Marja Mills, and it's in paperback. You can get it. No problem.
And this week's book is?
Ghost Set of Watchmen by Harper Lee. It's published by HarperCollins, and it's 34 99.
And how can people find you, Mr. Nolman, sir?
Well, you can't find me in Macomb, Alabama, that's for sure. Or in Monroeville, for that matter. But you can find me in the Montreal Times, in print every Saturday, or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, sir.
And thank you. I'm trying to do my best Atticus Finch, but I need that Gregory Peck nuance. I'm sorry.
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just in the home stretch here on this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have an idiot of the day coming your way in just a matter of moments on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. But I got a couple more Stuff File news stories to share with you before we get to that auspicious point, okay? We have a couple of items here that come under the heading of least competent criminals. Number one, a 26-year-old carpenter trying to break in, open an ATM at a bank in Delhi, India, at around 2:30 a.m., accidentally locked himself in the tiny space behind it, the area used to service the machine safely, and phoned police to come rescue him. Yeah, smart. And number two, a carjacker in Omaha, Nebraska, on July 16th, commandeered a car from a woman at gunpoint and climbed in. However, according to the woman, she is short and he was very tall. And after fumbling a bit trying to adjust the seat, he gave up, having driven only a few feet, and then he ran off. See, no matter what you do in life, what is always required is proper planning. An unnamed woman driving along Lake Huron in Ontario, Canada, was pulled over by police for speeding, going 150 kilometers in an 80-kilometer zone. Her excuse? She was trying to get to her cottage in time for the sunset. Police had a few problems with that, not even including the one that she would basically have to drive about at least 700 miles per hour at that latitude to keep up with the sun. No, they were more prosaic when it came to why they gave her the ticket. They noted that it was 8:30 a.m. and cited her for racing, suspended her license for a week, and impounded her car. I guess, I don't know, maybe her cottage is in Manitoba. No idea. And a Putnam County, Florida codes enforcement officer was checking a residential property and called in sheriff's deputies because of what he saw. Drug and vice detectives responded and dug up 91 marijuana plants from the home's yard, then returned to the office to research who owned the property to get a warrant for producing marijuana, which is a felony. They didn't quite finish that task when 47-year-old boy Gene Wiley showed up at the sheriff's office to file a complaint. Sheriff's deputies, he alleged, stole his medical marijuana plants. There is no allowance for medical marijuana in Florida, by the way. Wiley was promptly arrested. Okay, he had 91 plants. What kind of affliction would he have that would require that much medical marijuana? He must be in so much pain that I'm impressed he's upright. Really. Honestly. And still on a high, predictably, the religious freedom laws in several states are having unintended consequences. In Indianapolis, Indiana, one of those side effects is the First Church of Cannabis formed the day the law went into effect. One toke, one smile, one love, noted the offering envelopes at its first service. Police were out in full force, and the church had to tell its congregants they could not use marijuana at the service. They didn't want to risk arrests. Church founder Bill Levin, official title, Grand Poobah, promised to sue the state under Indiana's Religious Freedom Restoration Act to allow members, he calls them canitarians, to use pot and introduce them to, quote, the best prayer on earth. I love you, the bottom line, Levin said, is, I'm not a criminal, I'm a religious figure. Wow. If you think some people went crazy over gay marriage, let them get a load out of this. Interesting times we live in, with people circumventing and trying to find their way around the laws. Anyway, we are at that point in the program. If you listen on a regular basis, you know what it is, boys and girls? Yes, it's here. It's time now, once again, for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
When a man and a woman's cars were vandalized in Stamford, Connecticut, the victims had a pretty good idea who the culprit was. The man's ex-girlfriend, 20-year-old Shannon Sapia, had been sending him harassing text messages and apparently isn't a good speller. Both cars had been keyed and the tires punctured. The woman's car had the word WAR, W-O-R-E, scratched into the paint. And the police figured there was a missing H in the word. The woman was a friend of Shannon's, and apparently Shannon objected to her ex dating her friend. Shannon also posted a photo of police headquarters online with the caption, "Stamford police have nothing on me." But unbeknownst to her, we did have enough, and we obtained two warrants for her arrest from a judge and took her into custody at her home, police said. Well, you know, first of all, why? Oh, why? If you're going to vandalize using words, you don't bother to know how to spell properly. And second, why taunt the cops online by saying they have nothing on you? Well, one reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0316. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0316. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberstationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCore in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.